This podcast is supported by Midi Health. Are you in midlife, feeling dismissed, unheard, or just plain tired of the old healthcare system? You're not alone. In fact, even today, 75% of women seeking care for menopause and perimenopause issues are left entirely untreated. But it's time for a change. It's time for Midi. Midi's not just a healthcare provider. It's a women's telehealth clinic founded and supported by world-class leaders in women's health. Their clinicians provide one-on-one, face-to-face consultations where they truly listen to your unique needs. They offer a full range of holistic, data-driven solutions that isn't one-size-fits-all care. This is care uniquely tailored for you. At Midi, you will find that their mission is clear: to help all women thrive in midlife, giving them access to the healthcare they deserve. Because they believe midlife isn't the middle at all. It is the beginning of your second act. Ready to feel your best and write your second act script? Visit joinmidi.com today to book your personalized insurance-covered virtual visit. That's joinmidi.com. Midi, the care women deserve.
Brisk, cool, late night, early morning of Friday, March 16th, 1990, sometime around midnight, 17-year-old Toni Clark had just left her cousin's home in Oakland, California, after a short visit and was headed home to San Bruno. On that evening, she was driving her boyfriend's 1979 Chevrolet Camaro. The Camaro was known to stall, and that's exactly what it did as she was on the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. While stalled on the bridge, another driver rear-ended the Camaro with a heavy impact, which pushed the vehicle into the barricade. Police were called to the scene and they arrived within 6 minutes of the report. But, oddly, they only found the driver who rear-ended the Camaro, but no sign of Toni, the driver of the Camaro, so we think. She just seemingly vanished. The other driver was there, but Toni wasn't, as if the car was either left abandoned or something occurred in that split second. Just a week later, after the accident, Toni's mother received a chilling call that opened the door for many more questions, possibilities, and uncertainty. After almost 40 years of unanswered questions, theories, the exact timeline of what occurred that evening and what really happened, it makes you question if anyone had a hand in this or if it just was an unfortunate accident. We're going to cover the case details of all of what we know that happened that night, the case against the driver, explore some possibilities and theories of what could have happened, and close with my opinion. Though the details are slim with very little coverage and an even less comprehensive investigation, a case like this deserves a fresh look, a renewed perspective, and answers. This is the Missing Found Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Harlow. Before we get into the case, I have a few details to share about the show. The Missing Found is an investigative true crime podcast focusing mainly on unsolved missing person cases in the Black community. The cases that I cover have either gone cold, have little to no media coverage, or have gone without conclusion. You can follow the show on Instagram at The Missing Found or on Medium at The Missing Found to read our original script. I also would like to mention that we have a case suggestion form in the show notes or description box that you can complete to submit your case suggestions that are of the Black and Missing. I'm happy to announce that we have a YouTube membership that's now available for you to become a member in the evidence room to gain early releases, priority replies from me, and much more that's exclusive for members only. The show is available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. For Apple Podcasts, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating to help the show reach a broader audience to help find our missing. To access all things of The Missing Found, you can visit our website, themissingfound.com. I ask that you please like, share, comment your thoughts on this case, and subscribe if you found value and want to continue the journey with me to finding our missing and learning about their stories. This is case episode 35, The Disappearance of Toni Danielle Clark. Toni Danielle Clark was born on Sunday, June 4th, 1972, to her parents, Gwen Clark, and her father, whose name is unknown. It's not known how many siblings she has, but she does have a younger sister named Clarissa. Clarissa recounted how something just stood out about Toni. Everywhere they went, her sister was recognizable, and people would always greet her with high interest. There isn't much made public on her upbringing in early life, but Toni was a senior in high school, and she had big dreams. She was popular, outgoing, and had dreams of being on television and becoming an Olympic swimmer. Toni lived an active lifestyle of taking interest in swimming, dancing, and just being a great track athlete. Toni lived a wholesome life for a 17-year-old and had a welcoming disposition about her that made everyone feel seen. In early March of 1990, Toni received news that she was 2 months pregnant. She shared the news with her boyfriend. It's unclear how she and her boyfriend felt about the pregnancy, as there is no public record on that. The case details. On Friday, March 16, 1990, Toni made plans to visit her cousin who lived in Oakland, California. Oakland in the 90s was a high-crime area that was left with the aftermath of the crack cocaine epidemic. There was a lot going on in the area and probably not really safe for a young woman to be out at night. We don't know what the visit was for on a Friday night or who the cousin was, but we can assume she was there for a few hours. Upon leaving her cousin's home, Toni's boyfriend's 1979 Chevy Camaro had stalled. The engine wouldn't start. A family friend was able to get the car to start. She left, and Toni was headed towards home to San Bruno. To get home, she would have had to cross the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge, which is about a 30-minute drive from Oakland to San Bruno. While on the bridge, it was around or close to midnight, so it was dark outside, with a temperature of 53 degrees Fahrenheit. At some point, while on the bridge, the Camaro stalled on the bridge, then another vehicle rear-ended the Camaro that Toni was driving. But, oddly, there was no driver of the Camaro on the scene, which would have been Toni. Toni was driving sometime around midnight, and the traffic is significantly lighter on a Friday around that time and can take around 10 to 15 minutes to drive across the bridge. San Bruno PD were called to the scene of the accident and responded within minutes, and they were confused because only one driver was present, the driver that rear-ended Toni's boyfriend's Camaro. Police did enter the Camaro to see if there was any identification, and they found Toni's purse, car keys, cassette player, and a bracelet. I will go more in depth with the mystery on these items, specifically the bracelet. The physical condition of the Camaro did not show any blood, signs of a struggle, nor damage to the body of the vehicle, interior nor exterior, that would coincide with hitting an individual. Initially, San Bruno PD theorized that this was an unfortunate accident where Toni was standing in front of the Camaro, the oncoming driver rear-ended the Camaro, which then pushed into Toni and made her go over the Bay Bridge and into the water to never be seen or heard from again. The Coast Guard got involved to drag the waters, but they found no trace of Toni, no body, no articles of clothing, and no evident sign that the teen fell into the water. Interestingly enough, Toni's concerned mother, Gwen, felt strongly that Toni never fell into the water and was somehow abducted and was still alive. This is another element that I want to analyze in detail, and there's a reason she felt strongly about this. We'll discuss this in our case breakdown. Because law enforcement's theory about her falling over the bridge, the department decided to pursue charges against the driver who rear-ended Toni's boyfriend's Camaro. The young man who was driving the vehicle was 21-year-old Jesse Castaneda, who was charged with vehicular manslaughter and tailgating. The impact was so paramount that it was said to have made the Camaro fly 10 feet, then hit the guardrail, which is then when law enforcement theorized that Toni flew over the bridge. The charges were later dropped because there was no body to prove that Castaneda's hit resulted in Toni going overboard. Toni's mother still stood on the grounds that Toni was abducted and did not go over into the water. This is where the case is left for 36 years today. Before we move to the theories and break down the more intricate details, I want to go over some case facts so we can start there and progress forward with our case breakdown. So, the case facts. Fact one, we know Tony was pregnant. We don't know if this is just a red herring and has nothing to do with the case or if there is something there. There is no public context or evidence that states the boyfriend was uninterested or did not want the baby. This is just a detail we don't know. Fact two, her boyfriend's Camaro had issues with the engine because it would stall at random times. This could be dangerous, especially as a pregnant teen in the not so good area of Oakland. As far as we know, Tony didn't stall before accessing the bridge except at the cousin's house, but a family member was able to get it back started so she can be on her way. What happened after that, from once she left their house to the time she accessed the bridge, we don't know. That time is just unaccounted for. Fact 3. There were specific items left in the vehicle. Those items are as follows. Her purse, keys, a cassette player, and a bracelet. A gold bracelet that the family said she never took off. Fact 4. We know that Tony was not at the scene of the crash at the time San Bruno PD arrived. If she was, she was either hit and went over the bridge or something happened before. And lastly, fact 5. Witnesses claim they saw an African-American man at the front of the Camaro that appeared to be trying to fix the Camaro, assuming it stalled yet again on the bridge. Before we continue, I want to share something I've been working on, very intentionally. The journal I needed is now available, a 30-day guided journal created to help you begin each day grounded in scripture, honest reflection, and purpose. Each day starts with a daily scripture, space to check in with yourself, express gratitude, and set your intentions. And each day also honors a missing person because remembrance matters and every life deserves to be seen. This journal was created as a companion for healing, reflection, and quiet moments of grounding, especially after carrying heavy stories. The journal I needed is available now. You can find it at themissingfound.com or through the link in the show notes. Now back to the episode. The case breakdown. The details in this case are straightforward, but there are some gaps, just like with every case. If there wasn't, then we wouldn't be here today discussing Tony after nearly four decades, and still with no answers. So, let's start from the top. The trip home. We know that she drove to her cousin's home. We don't know what the visit was for or if it was just a random Friday night visit. The area of Oakland was dangerous back then. I'm unsure how common this trip was for Tony or how often she used her boyfriend's car, but the vehicle had issues that probably were not safe for her to be driving. After the visit, she was assumed to be on her way home. Tony lived in San Bruno, a suburb of San Francisco, which is about a 30-minute drive to Oakland. We can only assume that this is where she was going. Perhaps she told her family that this is where she was going. She was going in the direction of home, so that is all we have to go off of. I do question her need for gas. There has never been a mention of what level her gas tank was on upon leaving. This would let us know if she had to stop to get gas before taking the trip back home. I've even considered if the gas meter was functioning and working properly, whereas she can see where the gas was. Again, we don't know if she made a quick stop and something happened or if she kept driving onto the bridge. Which brings me to my next possibility. Exploring the possibility of danger before we knew. Tony could have stopped somewhere and something could have happened. I had mentioned that Gwen, Tony's mother, felt that her daughter was not hit and then fell over on the bridge. In fact, she believed that something happened to her daughter and she was abducted. If she was abducted, I can only think that something happened before the Camaro even reached the bridge. Perhaps the vehicle stalled again after leaving the cousin's home. Someone appeared to want to help her. Then she was abducted. That someone started the vehicle and drove it in the direction over the bridge. Car stalled again on the bridge. They attempted to jump it again. The vehicle was stolen, so they fled. This could explain why the gold bracelet that she never took off was left in the vehicle, because perhaps there was a tussle and the bracelet came off, when or if she was abducted before reaching the bridge. Her purse was still in the vehicle and the keys, along with the bracelet while the Camaro was seemingly left abandoned and hit on the bridge. But then, I look at it as who would abduct Tony during her car being stalled, take time to try and get it to start and hope that it starts, then abduct her and go on their way. There most likely would be another person involved if this is what happened. This is a similar to another theory I had with my very first case I covered on Nefertiti Traitor, who was seemingly abducted and went missing in Newcastle, Delaware in 2014, whose case remains unsolved today, 12 years later. Another theory to analyze is that perhaps the Camaro stalled, someone offered her a ride to a nearby gas station to use a payphone, and they abducted her. Someone went back to the Camaro and drove it to rid of evidence, but it ended up stalling on the bridge. Though possible, typically the perpetrator isn't going to go back to the scene that soon of a crime to rid of a vehicle by attempting to start it, then drive it. Again, possible, but I'm not sure that this is likely. Mom's intuition. Tony's mother felt her daughter was abducted and actually still alive, as I've already mentioned before. She had great reason to believe this. A week after the incident, there was a call that she received with the girl crying on the other end of the line before the call was disconnected. Gwen felt that it was Tony and someone had her. The phone number could not be traced, and nothing materialized after that report, but it is something to look at. We have to look at the possibility of it being a hoax, or perhaps it was Tony. After the accident, Tony did get media coverage, but just like with a lot of cases that are of the black and missing, the coverage was very vague, whereas it was more so leaning to a drowning and less of her being missing. Gwen never felt her daughter was deceased. Now, this could have been a mother's hope or a strong intuition. We also have to remember that there was no evidence or nothing to show Tony was deceased. There was no blood, no hair, nor evidence of a drowning to say Tony was no longer here. Just a missing person with no direction to point to a location of where she could be or what happened. Because of this, Castaneda's charges were dropped since though he hit the Camaro, there is no proof that his hit killed Tony since there is no evidence that she was even at the scene. My opinion. I heard about Tony's case probably 4 years ago. A case that seems so cut and dry, it leaves you with many questions. But I can see how this case was difficult to solve then, and even more today, almost 40 years later. There's just nothing to go off of. No solid leads, nor any surveillance. It was the 90s, 1990 exactly. Her time after she left the cousin's home was unaccounted for. What would help is if we knew the exact time she left her cousin's home to the time of the accident. This would pinpoint a timeline, but this is something we just don't have knowledge of. The first question that I have is who actually drove the Camaro over the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge? Was it Tony or someone else? This is an oddity because when Castaneda hit the Camaro, there was no driver at the Camaro. It was seemingly left abandoned. As I mentioned, there were passerbys on the bridge that said that what they saw appeared to be a black man under the vehicle or under the hood appearing to fix the Camaro. Now, we can't confirm this to be factual. If it is true, this could have been someone who was either involved or have information into Tony's whereabouts. We just don't know. If that were the case, then where was he when the vehicle was hit? Is he also a missing person? Did he get thrown into the water? Or did this even happen? When I look at this possibility, if there was someone who was involved that was seen tampering with the vehicle, if they were not there on the scene, where did they go? Who picked them up and how did they obtain the vehicle in the first place? I do wonder about the gold bracelet. I too have special jewelry that was gifted to me by my great aunt that I never remove. I also have a piece of jewelry that had broke, so I left it in my car until I got to my destination to remove it from my car and take it in my home, somewhere safe. There is no confirmation that Tony's bracelet was broke, and we don't know exactly why the bracelet was not on her wrist. Some say that she may have taken the jewelry off because she was in danger and wanted to leave it behind to show those who knew her personally that something happened since she was known to never take off the bracelet. We also can't forget that her purse was in the Camaro, which means that this did not appear to be a robbery. Lastly, As pertaining to this, we don't know the contents of what was in her purse. Her purse was there, but what about what was in it or the lack thereof? Tony was 17, a senior in high school, who was 2 months pregnant. She may not have been carrying a large sum of money nor anything of major significance. However, it's something I just can't confirm. At 2 months pregnant, she may have or may not have been experiencing fatigue and some nausea from the pregnancy. Why is this relevant? Well, because she may have gotten sick or was in a vulnerable state and needed assistance if the vehicle stalled. You can only imagine how vulnerable she would have been in a Camaro, in Oakland, a teen, pregnant, and alone around midnight. This would have been a compromising situation for her that would have absolutely impacted her safety. As for the boyfriend and father of their child, there is no name for him as it's not publicly stated if he was ever questioned or his opinion on Tony's disappearance. So, I guess you want to know what I think would happen. I think there is a possibility that something happened before the bridge. Though I'm not confident to say she was not hit while on the bridge, if she was even there, but there's no evidence to suggest that to be so.
I want to take a minute to stop the analysis right here. I'm in the middle of editing, and I was able to pull up an old news article from March 1990. This was, you know, as you know, the month that Tony had got into the, went missing, I'll say. And there are some things that are left out. There's a lot of misinformation out there. My opinion has changed. It has since changed while I've been editing the video. I do believe Tony is no longer with us. I do believe that she went overboard on the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge. Why? Because a couple who was on that night, a couple who was on the bridge at the same time as Tony, they almost hit her. At that point, her car had already stalled. One of the people in the car within that couple, they did communicate that they almost ran and hit her. And as they were continuing to drive, I guess that's when they heard the collision from Castaneda, who rear-ended the Camaro. And they did mention that they did see a young woman under the hood of the car, or as if she was tampering. They saw a silhouette of a woman. That woman can possibly be Tony. And when they look back, I guess in their rearview mirror, or they just didn't see that woman anymore. By then, the car had already crashed into the back of the Camaro. So that lets me know it is high possibility, though not fully proven, it is a possibility that that was actually Tony. It was not a man who was under the hood. It was Tony. And once the car had rear-ended the Camaro, it could have hit her, and that's what threw her over the Bay Bridge. My opinion has changed, and I do believe that it is highly likely that is what could have happened. As far as the call, it could have been a hoax. That's just something we're not sure of at this time. There was a case with Castaneda, you know, hitting for vehicular manslaughter. And so it was a charge for that, but the charges were dropped. So it could have received a little publicity back then. And, you know, with that one article on Tony, it could have prompted someone to do a hoax to pretend that it, you know, that they were her and that the young woman was crying. But that is what I believe. That's what I've come across since editing. So I definitely wanted to include that in my analysis before moving forward.
She was driving a vehicle that was unsafe for a 17-year-old to drive under the circumstance that it stalls. Tony seemed to be well-rounded, had direction, active in school, and was a responsible young lady who was about to enter the next phase of her life with being a mom and graduating high school. Somewhere in between a visit to her cousin and her, assumingly, en route back home, something went wrong. Whether it was the impact from the hit was so strong that it pushed her over the edge of the bridge and left no trace of her being, or something happened to Toni before she even got to the bridge. Which is just as heart-wrenching, because there is nothing solid to cling to, and we just can't account for her at that time. I do believe someone knows exactly what happened. A case as cold as this one, 36 years cold, nearly 4 long decades. I always say, in every case, until people start talking, there won't be any answers. Those that know aren't talking. There are a lot of holes within the case, a lot of unanswered questions, and not a lot of effort. Remember, I'm telling a story. I leave it to you to formulate your own opinion with the public facts of what we know and all of what we don't know. If it was Toni on the phone crying, who called and where was she? It's not uncommon for people to do a hoax when there's a missing person. So this could go either way. Till then, this case will remain open, unsolved, and hauntingly cold. At the time of Toni's disappearance, she was 17 years old, stood at 5'3 and weighed 110 pounds. Toni is a female, African American, has brown eyes and black hair. She has the following identifying marks: a mole on her left calf, a slight scar on the right knee, and a gap in her front teeth. At the time of her disappearance, she was 2 months pregnant and may or may not have had a change in her body figure. On that night, Toni was said to have been wearing a black tube top with lace, black linen shorts, and a blue jean jacket. She wore a 2 gold nugget ring on her right hand and a gold chain bracelet, which is what was found in the Camaro. Toni will be 54 today in 2026. If you have any information or leads in the disappearance of Toni Danielle Clark, her current whereabouts, or any information concerning Toni, it should be directed to the San Bruno Police Department at 650-616-7100. I know someone holds the answers to this 36-year-long mystery. Whether someone had a hand in it or this was a terrible accident that left no trace, this case can be solved. It just has to be looked at from all angles. It would have to involve someone who was willing to talk. Hopefully, Toni's family doesn't have to go another decade without answers. As always, please be safe, be vigilant, and always be aware of your surroundings. May God bless and keep you all. For the spirit God gave us does not make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-discipline. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7.